everybody, welcome to episode 3 of Profitable Architect Online Weekly Podcast. My name is Sara Colata and I'm an architect and a digital transformation specialist. I am fed up with the fact that architects globally are undervalued, underappreciated, and struggle to make enough for their living. This community is for students, young practitioners, academics, firm owners, and senior architects who are looking to raise their value by leveraging the tools of digital transformation. So in this episode, I will reveal the secret to a fulfilling career in architecture and how to practically implement it in your life. Now, if you have listened to my first 2 episodes, you will be eased into this one. But if not, that is okay. So far, I've taken the liberty to introduce myself from a more personal side as I share 2 stories of my life. Today, I will continue the last story. And if you're curious about what led me here, after you're done listening to this episode, you can go back and listen to the previous episodes. I also encourage you to connect with me on social media. You will find me on all platforms just by looking up my name, Sara Colata. You can try YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, as I share my stories, coaching, advice, and mentorship in many forms outside of this podcast. If you're a reader, you can read my blog on Medium or LinkedIn publications. And for a more audiovisual experience, you can also go to YouTube. All my work ties into the same exact topic of value and digital transformation for architects. In the last episode, I told you a little bit about my experience of discovering a small community in the very center of Shanghai, doing my first internship in architecture, which really was about 10 years ago, in 2010. But who were these people and what really was that place? I am sure you would like to know these answers just as much as I did back then, so let's dive back into the story. Curiously wandering into that community has impacted me greatly for the days to come. Nearly at every conversation that I was a part of, I kept asking about the roots of the people and the place that I discovered. A week passed by and no one could tell me anything, until the time of my Mandarin lesson came and my Shanghainese teacher showed up at my place. Her name was Ziruo. We sat down in the room at the table right at the open window, which was looking out into the beautiful urban view of the city. She was digging in her bag looking for a notebook and pens as I pointed at a place of my curiosity. Ziruo, what is this neighborhood in the middle of the center over there? She looked at me curiously and quickly answered, "These are the descendants of the people who lived on this land before the city was built. They were landowners, farmers, but as people started to purchase land for development, they had nowhere to go. They sold the land for cheap and started to live on the streets. Some of them come from the city peripheries, others are just poor." I was a little shocked at that answer. I knew that Shanghai, as metropolis, had been developing from the days before Christ. And it was obvious to me that since then the city has undergone so much transformation that the answer couldn't just be completely right. From a small fishing village, a thriving port, through communism in the early 30s, to Paris of the East, the city transformed drastically with rapid economic growth. The war, days of revival, and now modern Shanghai, indeed a powerful international hub. So it was really not about taking her answer literally, but still, what she was saying was really quite intriguing. What happens with the people who originally occupy our lands? The land wasn't always traded. At some point, someone simply just came in and took it, maybe bought it for cheap, and then, of course, developed mega structures on it. Architectures made to fit the needs of the emerging metropolis. There must always be someone who walks away from it at a loss. Why? Because what contributes to poverty is lack of education, lack of empowerment resulting in bad decision making. So who should make a decision here? Do we, as architects, contribute to deepening poverty? Do your design decisions, which you make from a comfortable office chair, result in someone else suffering? And if not, is there anything we can do as architects to envision and build a better future, not only for ourselves and our children, but for the other people in the world? And most of all, for the future of our generations. This is an important question for me. After all, quite literally every single architect I studied until today achieved something remarkable. But their achievements can be studied from many, many angles. There is power in design, and that power can both contribute to the benefit of a community or actually take away from it. I saw the potential in that, and it inspired me. But the everyday feelings I felt were different to that inspiration. I felt that the projects I worked on were shallow and that my position as an architectural drafter in the grand scheme of things was insignificant to the project or the people that the project really impacted. I was designing a highly developed neighborhood with museums, urban parks, housing, and even an artificial lake, with an artificial island on it. And I couldn't really think of anyone else but the developers and all that cash that is going into it. Flashy pictures of architectures and all the design offices involved, and those ghost towns so popular in China. Projects built for large scales and no one ever inhabits them. On the other side, there were landowners, now apparently occupying that self-built neighborhood just in front of my house. It was like standing on a crossroad. On the one hand was my well-defined work path of building a portfolio, getting a good credentials, getting a relevant experience as an architect and working for large practices. And on the other side was real life. And I have to admit, I kind of had no clue how to really tackle that. I had no idea that there is a way in which I can apply my skills differently to add more meaning to my work. I really didn't know much of anything else outside of the one career model which I've been introduced to at school. I think I told you already how uncomfortable facing that decision was for me, mainly because I haven't known of alternatives. I had no idea what to do next. Even though my school was in London and I was exposed to so much influence there, somehow up to that moment, I've never really considered the fact that in any possible way I might not be able to fit into the career that I was actually studying for. I was left with an unanswered question: how can I make my career more fulfilling? And maybe many of you have asked yourselves the same question. As I thought about this question, I actually realized that I don't quite know how to even go about finding the right answer. I had the skills by now and I had the education. What I needed is to do something with meaning, and I was standing in front of a great social need that I could focus on solving. What I realized then is that I was standing in front of that missing ingredient, and that ingredient had something to do with my why. Why am I an architect? 80,000 hours. That's the amount of time you spend in your working life. So it's worth really asking yourself what's the best way you can use them. One of the things worth understanding is that we have a lot to learn. Choosing a career is a complex problem that just has to be backed up by relevant information. Throughout most of history, people basically did what their parents did. Some people in the 80s thought that the best career choice is to follow the money. In our generations, we have been told that the best thing to do is to follow our passions. There's actually research done by Oxford University which shows that the use of this phrase, follow your passion, used in books, publications, and common language in reference to a career, has increased dramatically since the mid-90s. Today, I think that we should move on from asking ourselves what our passions and needs are and start focusing really on what can we do for other people and to make the world a better place. What following your passion is telling you to do is to really identify your greater interests. Then find careers that match those interests. And third, pursue these careers no matter what. Finding a fulfilling career is dependent on the courage you find to pursue your passion. So finding your passion leads to success, and that success leads to a fulfilling career, right? A research done on Canadian students proved that most of them were interested in sports, arts, and music. But economically speaking, only 3% of the career sector focuses on those topics, out of which a small percentage usually earn a good living. So the idea that success follows passion cannot be statistically right. And even those who made it to the small percentage of financial successes, they couldn't by default also claim to be fulfilled. Why? Because it might be the case that you might not find the work meaningful. It's just a little bit like a dilemma which I was experiencing. I can keep doing architecture the traditional way, working for a big architecture firm on development projects, but I wouldn't make a difference. Maybe, after all, I would fail to be fulfilled. So at this point I was thinking, passion cannot be everything, and surely there's loads of other things to consider to succeed. But maybe at least it makes me more likely to be fulfilled if I occupy myself with something that I love. It is quite surprising to know that a lot of research done on the topic of careers discovered that following your passion may not be the most optimal journey. With statistics showing that people in careers they did not fully match did better in them than the people who actually were 100% made for them, as they were more likely to actually burn out. What is quite curious to me is how much importance we put on our interests, underestimating really the fact of how often they actually change. Think of all those things you were interested in about 10 years ago and imagine what will drive you in the next 10, 20, 30 years. What that means is that your present interests cannot be a solid basis for choice as to where you should go with your career. So if you're not going to follow your interests nor passions, what should you do instead? Many statistics which I've mentioned to you in this podcast come both from research done by Oxford University and Benjamin Todd, who's the co-founder of 80,000 Hours. Yep, that's what they named their business. A charity dedicated to helping people find fulfilling careers that make a real difference. After years of researching the topic and helping people to find the right path, he claims to have found the absolute secret to a fulfilling career. Ta-doom, ta-doom, ta-doom. Do you know what that is? Do what's valuable. What that means is to focus on doing something that genuinely helps others and makes the world a better place. Now, the benefits of that approach are obvious for the general good for humanity and the planet. But let's go back to the aspect of personal fulfillment. A man's wealth is the good that he does in the world. For millennia, people believe that helping others is a secret to be personally fulfilled and happy. Today, we actually have hard data to back this up. Martin Seligman, psychology professor, in his book Flourish, aimed to sum up the last couple of decades of empirical research into what really causes people to be satisfied and happy with their lives. He says there are two ingredients to doing what's valuable. First of which is achievement or mastery, working hard and getting really good at something. The second is meaning, also called purpose. And that stands for doing something greater than seeking personal happiness. It's about making the world a better place. In summary, get good at something that makes the world a better place. So do what's valuable. From personal experience, I found that when you get good at helping others, then loads of people want you to succeed. So paradoxically, it actually is easier to be successful as an altruist compared to being in the game just for yourself. So if we were to revisit the follow your passion advice from the new perspective, it seems that doing what's valuable can lead to passion and as a result to a fulfilling career. I have definitely found this to be true in my own experience. After that experience in Shanghai, I turned everything upside down. I never worked for a big practice again, and I never, for a moment, not for money, not even when I was broke and I needed to fall back on my skills, I considered doing so. From that moment on, I chose a different path in architecture, which I now profoundly walk for over 10 years, and I'm looking forward to a lifetime of experience. What did I do exactly? I will tell you in a future episode, but I can give away one secret. Doing something valuable doesn't have to mean that you stick to one way of doing it. When you focus on the purpose, you're ready to put any hat needed to fulfill that purpose. A hat of an architect, a practice owner, a builder, a manager, but also a leader, a writer, a podcaster, and thought influencer. I don't define myself by one career anymore. I am an architect and many, many other things because I live my purpose and I constantly fluctuate between many roles to reach what I'm supposed to reach, which gives value to others. So my message here really is that a career is something that follows purpose. And purpose comes only from asking yourself, what can I do that's actually valuable? That is the key to fulfillment. So listen, wherever you are in your architecture career, maybe you're not fully licensed yet. Maybe you work for an office and the spark in you just dimmed. Maybe you had a family and stepped down from your architect's role. Maybe you just feel a little lost or a little unhappy or a little disappointed. Maybe you're working hard to grow your business and you're being weighted down by the responsibility of being a breadwinner for your family. Hence, you feel that it's the worst moment to be revisiting your values. You might also, by all means, believe in what you're doing, but somewhere inside of you, you might have this voice telling you that the project you're working on doesn't carry all that much meaning after all. Whatever it is, it's okay. Passion follows purpose. Focusing on doing what's valuable can give concrete, clean, and meaningful goals. I don't ask myself which of my interests represents my true calling, as I really don't believe that question to be right anymore. So the question remains, what is valuable in your career? Practically, Benjamin Todd recommends three things. Number one is explore. Go out there, learn what you can about the topics that interest you so that you can really test yourself in all these different things. He says that if you want to do something that is valuable, you have to discover what would that be by getting to know the world better. You cannot really figure that out just by thinking about your own interests. Secondly, he says to try to get some skills and become really, really good at them. Look out for skills which are in demand and which can be used in many different ways. I would say digital skills are a great example for the next decade. This is a place where your passions do come in, and it's a place where you can think about your passions, because something that you feel passionate about today can give you clues about what you could actually be good at in the future. And then, once you get those skills, go and find the biggest, most pressing social or environmental problem there is and apply your knowledge, experience, and skills to solve it. He had something I found so very important. He says, don't just pick a problem that is important. Try and find one that's been unfairly neglected by other people, because that's where you have to be to make the greatest impact. And finally, don't think that in order to do what's valuable, you have to go to Africa and build schools for children. Big problems often get solved by research, innovation, design, technology, education, influencing the arts and spreading big ideas. The key is to figure out for yourself where your skills can fit to really have an impact. I really believe that focusing on value is an intuitive thing. I want you just for one moment to imagine yourself at the end of your path, on the deathbed, where you're looking back at everything that you've done in life, looking back at those 80,000 hours that you've devoted to your career, and you're looking back at those two different paths. In one scenario, you look back at your possessions, your achievements, your pay raises, etc., but still wonder, what was it all for? And in the second scenario, you say to yourself, I really worked my arse off in the charity, being an entrepreneur, and it was really not easy, but through my efforts, I helped other people. Altruism is one thing you will never regret. If we want to be fulfilled as architects, we have to stop focusing so much on our own interests and instead ask what we can do for other people. And from that, both fulfillment and a passionate career will emerge. I see a future where architecture designers, engineers, and construction professionals can live their full potentials without being limited by their lacks or inadequacies. My vision is to empower an expert economy within architecture, where uniqueness is celebrated above rewarding hard work with meaningless diplomas, for the better good of an individual, but also a greater collective. So, if after listening to this episode you're asking yourself what's next, you couldn't be in any better place. Profitable Architect Online is here to draw a map to success and give you the exact tips you need to take your career as an architect in your own hands and run with it wherever feels right to go. As long as you focus on value for others, you will be taken care of and everything will be fun. Do I realize that this might turn the architecture world as we know it crazy? Of course I do, but I believe it's the only way for us to allow for full expression and to bring value that comes from our hearts, not from school books. This is not the 80s or the 90s. This is a digital world where we are exposed to so much information and freedom of speech, thought, and expression that the only thing we can begin to cultivate for the future is personal uniqueness, connection to self, and service for the better good of others. Stay tuned as I share my journey, my research, my observations, experiences, and wisdom here through this podcast and in all other social media channels. If you like this episode, click subscribe to be notified of the next episode coming out. They get published regularly on Fridays. Follow me on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Instagram under my name, Sara Colata. Share this podcast with anyone you can think of that can find this valuable. For a free Profitable Architect Online ebook download, go to saracolata.com/ebook. Opting into that page automatically puts you on my personal mailing list so that you can receive weekly email updates from me. This is episode 3, and it would mean a world to me if you leave me an honest review and rating on iTunes. It's just a little way in which you can help me reach a wider audience with my message. Thank you, and see you in the next show.